This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Just got a sad note there on the break. George Ashley was an official in the NHL. He retired in 1971. George was part of the Guelph Officials Association for a number of years. Was a baseball umpire as well. Passed away at the age of 82 on Monday. After George retired from the NHL in 71, he went on to officiate at the Memorial Cup as well, and was still, you know, continued to be active in both hockey and baseball as well. We offer condolences to the Ashley family from everybody here. With that, we'll move along and bring aboard Matt Marchese, still to come on the program. Greg Wyshynski coming up top of the hour, and then Andrew Brunette, Bruno, the head coach of the National Predators, coming up at the bottom of hour two. How are you today, Matty Marchese? Lots from last night, hey?
Yeah, no kidding. There was almost too much, Jeff, where I had to, you know, the flipping of games last night was, I know, we're gonna lament me saying that in about 3-4 weeks. We're like, oh, there's not enough hockey on. But yeah, there was a ton last night.
Yeah, remember the good old days of April 9th when a whole bunch of stuff happened? You know, Slafkovský got a hat trick, and so did Stamkos, and so did Kucherov, and the Flyers continued to spiral out, and then we saw a neutral zone collision between Mika Zibanejad and Adam Pellick, and Peter Laviolette went off as if it was a vicious Dave Brown, Thomas Sandstrom, or Dale Hunter, Pierre Turgeon type incident. Last night there was a whole bunch of a lot. I wanted to get into that Islanders Rangers situation, and listen, it would not surprise me. I talked to someone there yesterday who said to me, "Look, don't be surprised if Laviolette kind of walks it back a little bit after watching what happened, because I don't think anyone will look at the Adam Pellick, Mika Zibanejad situation and say, oh yeah, that was, as Peter Laviolette described it, a vicious shoulder elbow from Adam Pellick. That was Zibanejad colliding with a player who wasn't even looking or pointed in the direction of Zibanejad. How'd you see that one?
The old shelbow hit that we've constantly been looking for, the old shelbo. It sounds like a wrestling move, actually.
Crack down on that.
Yeah. No, yeah. I saw it the same way as I think everybody else except Peter Laviolette did, and that was they kind of just ran into it. Like, my first inclination was, on the slow motion, watch where Pellick's eyes go. He doesn't look at Zibanejad, like, at all. Or if he does, he takes a quick glance, and he doesn't change his course. He just stays in the lane that he's in. So I don't know how you could say that was intentional.
See, you're looking at the eyes on that one, and you're right. Like, he's looking into the zone. Like, he doesn't see Zibanejad at all. To me, if you're going to look for something, look for the feet. Look at Pellick's feet. Does he change his feet at all?
No.
They don't change. It's not like he's, like, maneuvering into a position where he can... Because we've seen that before, right? Listen, there have been teams... We've talked about this before. You know, Babcock's Detroit Red Wings. Todd McClellan's teams have always done this as well. You know, those casual picks that you said that you see, like, just shading players, setting a screen a little bit, just so you kind of get a little piece of a player, not enough to draw a penalty, but enough just to slow someone down. So even if he was doing something as innocent as that, you got to move your feet. He doesn't move his feet at all.
Yeah.
Again, we're pounding this thing, but he doesn't change anything. Zibanejad just ran into his shoulder elbow. The shelbow. Yeah, the shelbow. Thank you.
So
here, crack down on that NHL, those vicious shelbows.
Here's the other thing, too. Why in the situation that the Islanders are in would Pellick do that on purpose, knowing that there could be retroactive suspension for that? That makes no sense.
Here's another one. I'll take it another step forward, another step further. Why would a guy who's had like 4 concussions in the last year do that?
Yeah.
If it is, as Peter Laviolette mentions, a vicious shoulder elbow to the head, why would someone who's as sensitive as Adam Pellick would be about concussions do that?
Yeah.
One thing that we've seen before pretty much consistently is when you've had like a number of concussions, generally you kind of change the way that you play in a lot of regards. Like, you're not going to be as reckless. One, because you want to protect your own health and you know what the effects of a concussion can be. And I just don't see that, again, I don't know if we should give it much more oxygen to this one, because I think that, you know, Laviolette's going to probably walk this thing back, I would hope. I just don't see that as being an egregious play whatsoever. But Dobson on Trocheck certainly was.
Yeah, that
that's in the dying minutes. I think Trocheck's got a real point there.
That one to me is the one that you should be complaining about more. Like if we're gonna you know, go out of our way to say something, that's probably the one we should have the conversation about, and not the Zibanejad or the collision with Zibanejad and Pelech. Like, I don't know. To me, it's like pick your spot and make sure it's the right one. Because then you kind of look a little foolish. And, I mean, again, like you said, Peter Laviolette's probably going to watch that and go, ah, it was probably a little too hard on the old Shelbo. But, I don't envision it's going to get much more oxygen after. Although, they do play each other again very shortly. So, the oxygen will come back up very quickly.
Do we have the Patrick Waugh comments about that one? Can we play that? This is the sort of Patrick Waugh response to all of this. Do we have that one set up, Maddie? Okay, let's go. Here's Patrick Waugh, head coach of the Islanders.
Patrick, Peter Laviolette just said that he felt the collision between Pelech and Zibanejad was an intentional...
Accidental, you're right.
But he said intentional by Pelech.
No, it was accidental. The referee was in a really good position to see it. He saw it. I was more afraid that Pelech might get hurt on that one. I mean, he's the one that hit Pelech. I mean, it was the opposite, I think, that what happened. I mean... But the same thing happened in Pittsburgh with the referee. So, I mean, it was totally accidental. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, and I think Kelly was in a really good position to see everything, and he made it clear right away that it was accidental. So, but sometimes frustration make you say things.
Frustration, yeah, and the emotions of a coach after a tough loss. And again, to your point, they'll face off against each other on Saturday. So we're not going to have to wait too long to see these teams go back at it again. And that is very Patrick Waugh to preempt the end of the question by saying accidental. That a good chuckle over that one. Maddie, I don't think this is a hot take. I'm more impressed with fake Michigans than Michigans. You know what the fake Michigan is? Have you seen this before? I've seen it a lot in college hockey.
No. What's the? I mean, I probably have.
So the fake Michigan is the move where you have a player behind the net, and he bends down as if he's scooping up the puck, Mike Legg style, and so everybody bites as he comes around. Everyone assumes that he already has the puck on his blade, and he's trying to tuck it in. A player skates the other way behind the nets because the player faked picking up the puck. The puck is sitting there. You grab it and you tap it in because the goalie's moved to the other side and all the attention is on the other side. You can see this all over the internet. Teams, it's a big college move. At other different levels of hockey, you're starting to see it. I think the fake Michigan is more impressive than the Michigan. And kind of the Michigan now, I just kind of look at the same way I look at goals that are scored between the legs. Like, yeah, players do that. Is the Michigan still a big deal? Because for me, it's not.
I think it's a big deal in that it just showcases the skill.
But everybody can do it now. A lot of guys
can do it, but there's only a certain few that will do it, and I think that's the difference. Now, you've also given me a great idea for a men's league play now, so I appreciate you letting me know about this fake Michigan, because we're definitely trying that next week.
You haven't seen the fake Michigan?
I feel like
fake
I have.
Michigan is awesome.
I feel like I have seen it, and now I'm definitely going to talk to the boys for next Thursday night. We're definitely going to try that one out. I think Jeff's connection has frozen over here, so I'll continue this thing on. Last night, I'm sure we were going to get to this, but last night in Philadelphia or in Montreal, the Philadelphia Flyers, and what a lackluster performance by a team that's fighting for their playoff lives, and somehow, some way, the Philadelphia Flyers are still in this thing. I don't know how they did it, but they're still in it. Lance, can we cue up the torts from last night? So here's John Tortorella. He actually took a very measured approach yesterday, which, I mean, I'm proud of John Tortorella for taking a measured approach after losing 9-3 to the cellar-dwelling Montreal Canadiens. But very interesting post-game comments from the Flyers head coach. Here he is.
I'm not questioning their effort. I just think we've lost ourselves in managing games, and I think some guys may feel it a little bit because they want to try to get us out of this. But I don't question the care. I don't question the effort. because as I said, it's been a strong group all year long. I'm frustrated for them because we are this is rock bottom tonight for us, and hate to see us at this time of year be playing this way after all the good minutes we've put in throughout the year.
As you said, the effort is there, everything, but is the tank just empty?
You know, I think there's been a lot of talk of that. This time of year, all teams are tired. All teams are tired. We're not as gifted as some teams. We have a process that we're going through. We can't forget that. We're still building here. I appreciate all the work they put in to put us in this spot to play these type of games, but we just have not been able to elevate our game. It's my responsibility to put them in that spot and try to get them to elevate the game. Have not done it, these are hard lessons. One thing great about this league, and we're on the wrong side of it, it's unmerciful. When they get you, it's unmerciful, and I love that about the league. We just happen to be on the wrong end of it right now.
They're certainly on the wrong end of it right now. It's been a lengthy losing streak here for the Flyers. But I thought John Tortorella talking about how merciful this league can be, especially when you're down, and we're seeing that. Like, this is a hard league to win in. Apparently, we have the host of this program back on the air.
Hey.
There he is.
I got to start coming in. Enough of this. We just had a power failure for like 2 seconds here at the place. Everything shut down. I'm frantically trying to call back in on my timeline box. So there we go. We
it's got okay.
back
I'm in. Here
we were
to
talking
rescue.
About Torts and the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yeah, I played the clip from.
Good job. Thanks.
I played the clip from last night. And I'm just, you know, I thought Torts' approach was a very measured one. I think, you know, we talked about him. Like, there's only so many of those, you know, yell at your players and, you know, I'm the disappointed father thing. You can only do that so many times over the course of a year. I think he genuinely feels bad for this group right now because he said it. It's not for a lack of effort. We're just making mistakes that we didn't make during the year. And it's coming back to bite. He said, this league is merciful. And when you're down, they don't let up. And that's what happened last night. It's what's been happening to the Flyers for the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks now.
You know, I wonder too, considering, like, again, like, I always have to pull back on a team like the Philadelphia Flyers and say to myself, okay, so what was the expectation at the beginning of the year? The expectation was, this is a rebuild. This is the first dedicated year one of the Philadelphia Flyers rebuild, and holy smokes, they're winning. And all throughout the season, Daniel Briere and then later Keith Jones, you know, talked about focus on the future. And we saw this play out with Sean Walker. Sean Walker's having a great year with the Philadelphia Flyers, but they got the offer they wanted for Sean Walker, so Sean Walker was gone. They didn't get the offer they wanted for Nick Seeler. As a matter of fact, they signed him to an extension instead, and that's why Nick Seeler is still there, but is still very much eyes on the future. So maybe when we pull back on this thing and say, how do you evaluate the Philadelphia Flyers season? We shouldn't just evaluate it based on the collapse, because if they started out like this and then played the rest of the season as if they played the beginning first, I don't know, 70 games of the season, we probably would have said good season, but instead we're just remembering the collapse. I always try to catch myself and say, okay, if this 8-game losing streak happened at the beginning of the season and not the end of the season, how differently would we judge the Flyers season? It just feels more profound because they were in a playoff spot and everybody in the Philadelphia Flyers organization and their fans were thinking, we're going to see the playoffs while we're rebuilding here. This does not happen very often, if at all, in the NHL. Now, to the point about John Tortorella, I just want to spend a minute and a half on this one if we have the time. I think that John's gotten to the point with the Philadelphia Flyers where now he realizes that the way he's been testing this team isn't going to work anymore. And when you do something like that, like when you coach the way that John Tortorella does, you really run a tricky game because at a certain point, players are going to say, I can't keep going through this. I can't keep going through what we're seeing. And I do wonder, because I had more than one person suggest this to me, I wonder if the moment, and this is why the exit interviews, Elliot and I mentioned this in the first part of the program, I wonder what the exit interviews are going to tell us. I wonder how many players talk about the scratching of Sean Couturier and how it affected the room. And I know that John Tortorella's big point is like, look, everybody's equal in this room. I don't care whether you're, you know, Noah Cates or Cam York or Sean Couturier. If I need more from you or if I think you need to sit down, you're going to sit down. But you know players, Matty. Everyone in that room knows exactly what Sean Couturier went through with his back and the surgeries to get back in the lineup. Everybody knows how widely respected Sean Couturier is, not just on the Philadelphia Flyers team, but around the league. Everybody knows that. And I think, or I wonder if that really disrupted this group. And a lot of players looked at it and said, no, that's not right. You can scratch me, that's fine. But you do that to Sean Couturier 2 weeks after you make him captain, that's not right. I am curious to see how many Philadelphia Flyers point to that at their exit interviews. We'll see.
Yep.
Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. You got three to choose from tonight, Matty. What are you thinking?
Oh, it's the marquee matchup for me. Potential for a clinching scenario for the Vegas Golden Knights. They're in Edmonton to take on the Oilers. The Oilers are favorite by 1.5. Vegas is 4-2 straight up in their last six against the Oilers. The under has hit in 13 of the last 20 games for Vegas against the Western Conference and 8 of the last 11 games for Edmonton against the Western Conference. And as we know, we may not see Connor McDavid tonight as the chase for 100 assists continues.
Yeah, I really hope we do, but that is the big story. I mean, it's McDavid versus Eichel. As Matty mentions, McDavid is questionable with the LBI. You know, with Connor McDavid in the lineup, win percentage of .583 for the Oilers without .452. Goals per game, 3.22 with McDavid, 2.25 without. The power play with McDavid, this is historically here, 25.1% without, 14.7. And if you look at the head-to-head matchup between Eichel and McDavid, both regular season and playoffs, they're pretty much identical. Record for Eichel, 10-7-3. Record for Connor, 10-6-4. 9 goals for Eichel, 10 for Connor. 25 points for Eichel, 28 for Connor McDavid. First, you hope he's healthy. Second, you hope he's playing tonight. So I want to see the replay of the 2015 draft. Eichel versus McDavid. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. Greg Wyshynski is next.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. This segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. Welcome back to the program. Please be joined now by the head coach of the Nashville Predators, the playoff-bound Nashville Predators. He is Andrew Burnett, and he joins me now. Andrew, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, no problem, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing very well. A few things I want to go over here, and I'm going to actually go back into your minor hockey past for one of them. But before we get there, I'm curious we're talking Sudbury, don't worry. Well, I'm curious what your message was yesterday after the game. First of all, really exciting game yesterday between your Preds and the Winnipeg Jets. Didn't go the way you expected or hoped for. It's a loss in overtime, but in the process, you clinched a playoff spot. What does the coach do with that? On the one hand, you're pleased that a playoff spot has been clinched. On the other hand, you lose the game. What did you do with that one afterwards?
Well, I think we just stay straight ahead. It's kind of been our motto. Obviously, congratulate them. We don't do anything easy. It's been that way all year, and it probably you couldn't script it any better. Unfortunately, we didn't get the 2 points at the end. But I just think with our ability to stay with the process, I think it really builds resiliency and grit, and we've shown that through this whole stretch. It was a hard game, and we've kind of been snake bitten here the last little bit, but we stuck with it. We didn't deviate from who we are, our identity. And you preach that you're going to get a bounce, the play is going to happen, you're going to get one look. And I was glad they got rewarded. And you know, in overtime, it is what it is when we get in those situations. But for us to grind through the third period and stay true to ourselves and find a way to get a bounce or make a bounce happen. And obviously, after scoring a huge goal, really, for me, that was where the pride of the group and what we're doing really sunk in.
Listen, I don't need to tell you this. Nashville has been one of the best stories, and to many, myself included, one of the best surprise stories in the NHL this season. And one of the things that I keep coming back to is the relationship between the coach and the general manager. And I know that a lot of people say, like, oh, you got to stay in your lane, and fiddlers fiddle and dancers dance, and I don't interfere, I don't have this conversation. How much do you talk to Barry Trotz about this team, this roster, what you need, what you like, what you don't like? How much communication is there between you and Barry, who obviously would know a thing or two about coaching as well?
Yeah, I mean, Barry's a great communicator, and our history's gone back 30 plus years, and it hasn't really changed. Obviously, he's a mentor, somebody I bounce stuff all the time. And with Barry, you know, you're gonna get empathy, you're gonna get compassion, but you're always gonna get the truth. And whether you want to hear it or not, and I'm used to it. It is black and white with Barry, but he's been a great friend to lean on through different times. And the advice he gives you is the same advice he gave me, you know, as a 20-year-old kid trying to play in the American League. When it seems like when you needed a little bit of kick, he gave you one, but he was always there for a hug. And I think our relationship is stayed true to itself.
There's a couple of players I want to ask you about specifically, and I want to get to Roman Josi here and, you know, the Norris Trophy, the Hart Trophy, things like that. But the one player that I keep coming back to on your team is Gustav Nyquist, who, you know, at the very young age of 34 is having his best season ever. You know, when you talk about comeback players, I mean, Jonathan Drouin's been a great story in Colorado. That's no secret. And, you know, Gustav Nyquist has 72 points in 79 games. This is the best season points-wise, production-wise, we've ever seen him have. What was the key from your point of view to unlocking Gustav Nyquist? I'm sure you're going to say something along the lines of, well, we put him with Ryan O'Reilly, but is there more than just, well, we put him with Ryan O'Reilly?
Oh, for sure. And I think, you know, Gus has been a really good player in this league for a long time, and you can talk to the Minnesota guys and the Columbus guys, and they just rave about what he brings day to day. And I think we got to be mindful, you know, of the injuries he's had, you know, over the years, and obviously the last couple in particularly, where, you know, he's been banged up a little bit. He hasn't been healthy, but if we remember him back in the Detroit days, you know, when he was with those high-end players, he's smart enough to play with them, you know. And he's really in the primary role this year. And he's an incredibly intelligent player. He's got tremendous poise, and he sits in good with anybody you play with him. But I think him, Phil, and Ryan just had really good chemistry as soon as they played together. And you could tell they enjoy playing each other. And I think when players enjoy the process, enjoy playing with players, usually that's when their best years occur. At least personally, that is how it worked for me. And I believe that with Gus.
Let me ask you about Tommy Novak. And right around trade deadline time, I know a lot of teams inquired. I believe the New York Rangers were one of the more aggressive teams pursuing Tommy Novak. I'm curious, like I asked you about, you know, the relationship with Barry Trotz. You know, how much would you be talking to Barry about, you know, we can't lose Novak, we got to keep him, etc.? And then what type of relief did you have when he signed long-term with the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Barry, I'm fortunate enough in my career, I worked upstairs and kind of did the player personnel, front office kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I understood organizationally, you got to make decisions. So I think we're, you know, constant communication. I wanted to keep Nobi. I think Barry did too. I just think the fit and the price had to be right. And I'm glad, you know, Tommy in his group realized it is a good fit. We love him. He fits in perfect. And maybe sacrificed, maybe he didn't, but he wanted to be here. And I think we always want players that want to be in a place, and Tommy, you know, made it happen, and we're forever grateful, especially down the stretch, the way he's playing and what he brings to our hockey club. He's kind of a unique player. We don't have a lot of guys like him, so he fits in really good.
Roman Josi. Here's someone that's going to get a lot of consideration for the Norris Trophy. Here's someone who should get some consideration for the Hart Trophy as well. I mean, listen, he's your workhorse. He's over a point a game. You know, down this stretch when your team really started to crank up the wins, you know, every day we pick up the game sheet and look at Josi and it's, you know, one goal, two assists or two goals and two assists. Like, he's just been fantastic for you guys. What's he meant to this team from the coach's point of view?
Well, obviously we take him for granted. I think, you know, you're talking about the big picture of the awards you know, and I've taken him for granted from the outside and to your inside, working with him every day and what he brings. And what I really appreciated was his willingness to maybe, I wouldn't say change, but be open to playing a different style. You know, I think it was a little bit early on, probably he was wondering why is he asking me to do this and why I've had great success doing it my way. But he kind of bought in, and it just shows his leadership, how selfless he is as a guy. I don't know if I've played with a superstar with less of an ego, or, I mean, he just wants the best for everybody. And so I was really fortunate, because it could have went the other way, where he said, you know what, I've got 95 points playing it my way. I don't really want to play it your way.
Yeah.
But he was open to it and embraced it. I think he's starting to see the results, and he's been tremendous, especially once he kind of got a hang of what I was asking him to do and seeing that it works. He's taken off, and he's played at a Hart. I agree with the Hart Trophy. I agree with the Norris Trophy. He's just been the heartbeat of our group here through the second half, especially the second half of the season.
He's been exceptional. Okay, so I talked to a couple of different people about you over the past couple of weeks, and one person said to me, and I'll give you the exact quote, "Nobody has more face-off plays than Bruno." Nobody has more face-off plays than Bruno. First of all, is that true?
I don't think that's true, but you never know. I think you know, every morning you kind of draw them up on your sheet when you're bored, and some of them work, some of them don't work. But when you got a guy like, you know, I think I had more when I played. When I was playing, I always had these great ideas how to create.
Uh-huh.
So you're always talking about it and getting plays. I think as a coach, especially as a head coach, I've kind of left it alone and let, you know, our face-off guy, Derek McKenzie, kind of handle it. And, you know, you give him some information. But when you got a guy like Factor, he's creative. He's been in the face-off. You kind of let them, you know, you want their creativity. I appreciate as a player that all my coaches let me have my creativity and things that I saw. Because I think the players, when you're on the ice and you've been around, you kind of know what's going on. And I love, that's what I think what makes, you know, the O'Reilly, Forsberg, Nyquist line so good is they're constantly talking. And you don't see that a whole lot anymore, where every time they come off the bench, they're talking what happened in play. So I kind of let them do their own thing. But when I played, I definitely, for some reason, had way more.
Okay, let me follow up with this then. I'm always curious about this one. We used to see this with Anaheim, specifically with Getzlaff and Perry and Maroon. But how many plays in your mind involve your center deliberately losing the draw?
Well, in my mind, when I played, yeah, we definitely had a few of them. You know, you kind of, I remember playing with Ray Ferraro. You know, we always had, depending where we were, you know, we're at, or we always had something that happened, especially in the offensive zone where you kind of catch them and you might get a quick strike out of it.
Yes.
And you catch a lot of teams off guard. So I think definitely was in the play. The playbook, you know, we had some plays where we just slap it to the boards and, you know, you'd let him pick it up and I'd go right at the D and we'd create a little bit right off of that. It's almost a lost draw where I had to set the pick. But yeah, for sure. You know, I love that play. And I don't know if it's great you brought it up because I kind of forget about those. Those are, that was a great play and you don't see it that often.
we'll watch for that against Chicago coming up later on this week.
Yeah, everybody's worried about the face-off percentage, so it's hard for me to go tell a centerman to lose the draw, and he's like, "Well, that might cost me $500,000 if I lose that draw."
That's,
you know, I'm at 50% right now.
Yeah, you're trying to kill me in arbitration here, Coach. What are you doing? I got arb coming up this summer. Okay, so someone I talked to this morning, I said, "Listen, I've got Andrew Burnett coming on," and this person said to me, "You have to ask him about the story." Now, listen, I used to watch you when I would go to OHL games when I was going to University of Guelph, and you tore apart the league and dominated. You had a wonderful NHL career as well. But he said, you got to ask him about being cut in Sudbury by his midget team. What's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Batum. It was Major Batum I was cut. I think midget. We went to Rayside Balfour and midget. But I was cut by a Major Batum team in Sudbury. And you know, it's one of those things. And it made me stronger, but obviously it hurt. And I remember an old coach of mine, Jim McLaughlin, telling me, he said, you know what, there's going to be a time in your career. And this is, I'm like 10 or 11 years old. He said, somebody's going to tell you, you can't skate. And whatever you do, don't forget what you do. Well, nobody can do what you do. And I was sitting there, you know, I was 10 or 11. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I score like 5 goals every game. Like, he's crazy. And, you know, at 15, at 14 or whatever, it rang true. And I couldn't skate. Yeah. But I didn't. I believe what I could do. Not too many guys can do what I could do. It was really hard. But I think what I've always leaned back on, and I've been fortunate, one, to have great parents that always stood with me and friends, but it was just, I love the game. And so I went to play AA with my friends, had an unbelievable season. I had a lot of joy in it and, you know, kept my self-confidence and waited for my next opportunity. And it was, you know, hard because I think I understood I couldn't skate probably. But, you know, you go to that tryout and I think I had 3 or 4 goals the game they cut me, and you're kind of not understanding why. And there's different things that happen. There's politics, as you know. I know you're in the youth hockey world right now. I think just keeping that self-confidence, it served me well for the rest of my career. And you know what? I think probably need to be cut. And that's how you get better. That grit and teaches you resilience. And I think it really teaches you how much you really love the game. Because this game is really hard to play if you climb up the pro level. And if you don't really love the game, you don't have a chance.
That's a great answer. Okay, one more for you. I'll let you get on with your day. The word relentless, we've heard you say it a lot, and we're hearing members of the Nashville Predators use it a lot. I think a little bird told me they might be making relentless T-shirts to sell at the store at Bridgestone as well. The word relentless, what does that mean to Andrew Burnett?
It means when I watch our team. And we were relentless last night, and I think we've found that identity. To me, it's just a word. The players have brought the word to attention. And it sort of comes from Joel Quenneville. I mean, that was Joel's big word a lot of times, and he'd always want his team to be relentless. And, you know, I would talk about it a little bit, but when I started watching him play probably, you know, for most of the year, but it really stuck out, after the Vegas trip when we went on a little string of games. And I'm watching the video, redoing the game, and the words just kept popping in my head. And I thought, this is exactly, you know, what we are. We're relentless, and we're relentless in every aspect of the game. We don't give up. We keep coming at you. We take time and space away. We do all these little things. So it's just the word. They've really encompassed the word big time.
We look forward to seeing the T-shirts, and we look forward to seeing the Preds in the postseason. I know you defer a lot to Gus Nyquist and Roman Josi, et cetera, but, you know, there's a place there for you to take a bow as well. Great job so far with the Preds. Look forward to seeing some yellow in the playoffs. Thanks for doing this, Andrew. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, Jeff. Thank you.
There he is, Andrew Burnett, who will be, by the way. I know that a lot of us have sort of handed this thing to Rick Tocchet, and he's been fantastic for the Vancouver Canucks, don't get me wrong. Also in consideration is going to be Andrew Burnett for the Jack Adams as the head coach of the year. This would be, you know, the second time that he's been certainly considered. We think back to the Florida Panthers as well when he was a runner-up for that award, and he should be very much in the top three this year as well. For the longest time, it looked like the race was going to be Tocchet and Tortorella. That is now turned into Tocchet and Brunette, although there's going to be a lot of other coaches that are in this conversation for it this year as well. But for me, top of mind, Rick Tocchet, Andrew Brunette have done outstanding work with the Nashville Predators. And, you know, it is interesting that Brunette finds himself with Barry Trotz with the Nashville Predators because, and he referenced this in the interview, you know, we all thought that Andrew Brunette, you know, post playing career was going to be someone that pursued management, and he was in management with the Minnesota Wild, which, you know, I think surprised or maybe caught a few people that he ended up taking a coaching position with the Florida Panthers once upon a time, and then subsequently went on to New Jersey and now finds himself as a full-time head coach of the Nashville Predators. You know, this is a kind of a career, because I don't think that Andrew Burnett has completely let go of the idea of working in management. And I still think there are people around the league that could see Burnett working as a general manager one day, not unlike his boss now, his general manager in Barry Trotz. It wouldn't surprise anybody if the career arc for Andrew Burnett is similar, if not identical, to that of Barry Trotz. We thank Andrew Burnett for stopping by, and we thank the Nashville Predators for making him available, and congratulations to the Preds for making it into the playoffs and making the season interesting. Thanks also to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN and The Drop Podcast. Thanks so much, as always, for stopping by. He's here every Wednesday. Thanks to Matt Marchese for when the power went down at my place, he was parachuted in to help salvage the program and keep us on the air. So thank you for that, Matty. Thanks to Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast and blog for stopping by the program, as he often does. This segment of the Jeff Merrick Show is brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today. The crew behind the glass, Lance Kennedy and James Wilson, thank you, thank you, thank you. Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey tonight. The Oilers and the Vegas Golden Knights. Three games to choose from. Watch one, watch two, watch them all. We'll talk about it tomorrow right here.